die groot trek saam Dobbenina Wesa tussen 3 en 6.
So as jy vandag rondry en jou grootste kop seer is die verkeersligte wat nie werk nie of die slaggat in die pad. Dan moet ons dankbaar wees dat dit die grootste probleem is wat ons het op hierdie huidige oomblik, want ons het al begin vergeet van wat in Oekraïne aangaan. Ek het so pas 'n WhatsApp gekry en uit die ander kant van die wêreld uit waar daar vir my gesê is dat die hoofstad Kiev is besig om gebom te word deur fighter jets en daai tipe goeders. En ons moes weer incheck met vriende van ons joernalis Ruslan wat in Oekraïne is en daar werk. En ek het net vroeër vanoggend met hom gepraat want toevallig as gevolg van al die gebommery wat hulle die kragstasies en so voorts bom, het hulle ook soort van 'n beerdkrag waar hulle net sekere tye van die dag krag het. Dit affekteer hulle internet, dit affekteer die krag, so hulle moet probeer om dit werk, en om met ons te kon praat, moes ons dit vooraf opneem. So, hier is die gesprek wat ons met Ruslan gehad het, klein bietjie vroeër vandag.
So, vanmiddag op die groot trek, saam met ons Ruslan, hy is alipad van Oekraïne af, ons het baie lanklaas bietjie ingecheck met ons vriende daar, om te hoor wat precies is aan die gang, wat die situasie op die grond daar is. So thank you very much for taking time to chat to us, Ruslan.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation and for this opportunity to talk to your audience and to your colleagues, because I'm a journalist, so I can call you colleagues.
Well, I am glad that you mentioned that you are a journalist, because I think that is one of the biggest things I personally have wanted to know is, it seems like the media has kind of gone away from reporting on the situation between Russia and Ukraine. We aren't seeing as many articles or feedback as we did when this thing started at the beginning of the year. Now, is the media trying to hide something? Are we totally desensitized to war and that kind of thing? Or why aren't we getting as much information as we did earlier in the year?
Well, I think that is, of course, typical for any kind of conflict or war. At the very beginning, everybody is in shock. And so the topic began, become very important, and all media in around the globe begin to make stories and reports, and because that's a kind of shock. But after a short period, the number of attention becoming less. Just recently, I have been to United States and spent there 2 weeks. And if to speak about United States, there are till now a lot of information about the war in Ukraine. So I think it depends on the country, of course. So usually that countries which are involved very much, for example, in supporting Ukraine or in providing some kind of assistance, financial or weapons, usually they cover more. I need to confirm that the war still is going on. And it is huge, it is large scale, and now it is in active phase, so everything, unfortunately, is going on right now. So we need to keep our attention on these circumstances.
So, Ruslan, you mentioned that you were in the USA a while ago. Was it easy for you to leave? Can people come and go now as they want? Are the airports open?
No, the sky is totally closed above Ukraine. So from the early morning, February 24, the sky was closed for all type of aviation. So now any Ukrainian who wants to travel, who wants to fly anywhere, we need to use airports in Poland, in Romania, in Moldova, in Hungary. So usually most of Ukrainians, they use airport now in Krakow and Warsaw in Poland. And also another information that for now it is forbidden for all men to leave the country. So, and there are a few exceptions. For example, for men who has 3 and more kids. For example, I have 4 kids with my wife, so I'm able to leave the country for a short period. And also people who are disabled and who have some business trips. So there are a lot of limits for men. In fact, it is forbidden for men to leave the country for now. This small list of exceptions.
So daar's baie wat aangaan op die huidige oomblik in Oekraïne. Ons het al vergeet daarvan. Ons het nodig om te bid vir hierdie mense, want het is ongelooflik hoe ernstig die noodgeval daar so regtig is. En ek het nie dit weer opgetel toe ons vanoggend met Ruslan gepraat het, maar daar's meer vrae wat ons hom gevra het oor die situasie wat plaasvind in Oekraïne en hoekom spesifiek die mans nie kan gaan nie, die kerke, die plekke van geloof waar die mense skuilings kan vind, die mense wat nog daar oor is, wat nie al probeer het om Poland toe te gaan en so voorts nie. Wat die situasie op die grond is. So die huidige situasie in Oekraïne is bitterlik ernstig en 10 minute voor ons nou begin het om hierdie uit te speel, toe het ons woord gekry uit Oekraïne uit, dat daar is weer bomme wat heidiglik val, nou in Kiev en ander dele van die hoofstad. So die situasie is baie ernstig. Ons het met Rusland gesels, hy is journalis in die hoofstad, en hy het vir ons bietjie meer vertel oor hoekom mans specific nie op die oomblik uit Oekraïne uit mag gaan nie.
What is the specific reason behind men not being able to leave the country at the moment?
Because we have a real war in Ukraine. It is not a regional conflict as some Buddhists think. It's a real war. That's why, of course, all population is totally involved in defending our land. And of course, first of all, we speak about male, about men. So they are involved in the army. They can be invited to the army anytime and any moment. So of course, each male should stay in the country. The situation is very serious. So we need to protect our land, and in fact, the whole population of the Ukrainian nation accept that rule with no problem. So everybody understands that it's not a problem for us.
You keep mentioning that the situation on the ground is very real. It's a real war. Men are being mobilized. Paint us a picture of what is happening. Is there constant bomb threats? Are there bomb sirens going off? How are people interacting with each other? Are people still leaving? Are people still trying to just stay in their homes and stay safe?
Ukraine is a huge country. Ukraine is the biggest country in Europe if we speak about territory size. It's the biggest country. On the second place is France, for example. So the territory of Ukraine is huge. So, of course, the first of all, front line is in south, near Black Sea and the Sea of Azov, and on eastern regions of Ukraine. So a lot of the cities and villages now are on the front line. That's why about 10 million of people are refugees, and they do not live in their own homes. Only imagine about 10, 12 million. Half of them, about 5, 6 million, they live out of Ukraine, and half of them, they are refugees inside our country. They live in western cities or northern cities of Ukraine. But anyway, alarm sirens is all the time everywhere in all regions of Ukraine. For example, just for you to imagine, October 10th, just a month ago, we live in Kyiv with my family, with my wife and with my four kids. October 10th, I just brought my kids to kindergarten at 8 a.m. and came back to my home, and all my neighbors, they have seen a missile which was flying just above our house. And in few minutes, it reached downtown of Kyiv and exploded there. And it was a terrible bombing of Kyiv downtown just a month ago. Several people were killed. A lot of automobiles were damaged. It was a real downtown. For the last time, Kyiv downtown was bombed in 1942 by German fascists, 80 years ago. And 80 years later, again, Kyiv capital, in the center of Europe, well-developed country, is totally under attack. For example, almost every day we have a war, a siren alarm all over Ukraine. For now, for last months, Russia tried to attack all our energy system. So Russian troops now, they fail on a field of battle. So now they attack civil infrastructure. They destroy all energy system. Or now in Kyiv and in other regions, we have no lighting and electricity about 10, 12 hours a day, sometimes even 24 hours. If you speak about Kharkiv or Kherson, for example, Kherson is my native city. It was deoccupied, liberated just a few days ago. There is no light. There is almost no internet connection. If you speak about cities close to Mariupol or Donetsk or Lugansk, it's very close line, front line. People do not live there. They left the territories a few months ago and they live in Kyiv, for example, or in Lviv or in some western cities. So, for example, in my office, almost all my staff live in Norway, in England, in United States, and in other countries. So about half of our volunteers, we have about 100 volunteers for our organizations, they live out of Ukraine. So it's like a kind of acceptance when people stay in the country, because the risk is very high all the time and everywhere. In Ukraine, there is no safe place. Of course, there are like more safe and less safe, but there is no 100% safe place to stay in our country because Russian missiles and bombs can fly everywhere and they do that.
En dit is die ergste wat hy nou gesê het hierdie laaste deel. There is no safe place at the moment in Ukraine. Daar's plekke wat bietjie meer veilig is. Maar nêrens is veilig nie.
Ja.
En soos wat hy het sê, vanoggend het hy dit vir ons verduidelik en vanmiddag, 'n paar minute terug, het ons gehoor, daar's bomme in die hoofstad en goed soos dit. Ons vergeet hiervan, dit gebeur op die voorstoep, maar ons is te geworried oor wat doen die Kardashians en jy weet, wat gaan aan met die rugby en al sulke goeders, terwyl die arme mense daar so sit in vreeslewe.
Maar hy het nog baie interessante goed gesê oor die kerke daar en die Christene, asseblief bly geskakel, moet nêrens heen gaan nie. Baie interessante koneksies met Suid-Afrikaanse Christene. Ons gesels met Ruslan vanuit Oekraïne, ons hoor bietjie wat daar aangaan op die vloer en ons het bietjie gevra hoe lyk die dinge by die skole en die kerke in die land.
So, Ruslan, you mentioned that you took your child to school. The people who chose to stay in Ukraine, can they freely go to school and church? What is the situation there?
Depends on the city and on the region. If we speak about Kyiv, the capital of our country, where I live with my family, I think it depends on is school or is there is a shelter in the school. For example, if there is a shelter in the school, usually such kind of educational buildings, they work and they accept kids. If there is no shelter in the school, they study online. If we speak about eastern cities like Kharkiv or Slavyansk is a big city about 10 kilometers close to front line. Of course, all schools are closed. And there is almost no children because all families with their kids, they left the territories and they live in other cities which are more peaceful. So the decision of Ministry of Education, so that school principal and parents, they make a decision what kind or what type of education they will choose for this moment, online or offline. And it depends on a shelter, if there is a shelter. If you speak about church services and church gatherings, usually they are everywhere till now, even in front line, even close to front line, with a huge risk for pastors and for Christians, of course. The majority of church members, they left their cities, but church and gatherings on Sunday morning, they are. Because a lot of people, they come to churches for humanitarian aid, for food. So that's why it's interesting to emphasize and to underline that for now, churches are growing very fast in Ukraine. A lot of people, new people, are coming to churches. Of course, sometimes, first of all, they come because of humanitarian aid, and they can receive there. But at the same time, a lot of people, they accept Jesus as their Lord and Savior. So it's very interesting process that at the in the heart of the, in the moment of the war, a lot of churches, they are growing very fast right now, even close to front line. The same in Kyiv. But all families, not all families, but many families who have some kind of contacts abroad or in western cities of Ukraine, they try to escape and they try to leave their homes to keep safe their kids.
One of the things that you mentioned now is that churches are growing. And I see also in the document that you sent us that there's been a lot of persecution of Christians, arrests of the pastors, destruction of churches. Is this because of the aid that the churches are bringing to the people, the hope that the churches are bringing to the people of Ukraine?
Ukraine is the most Christian country among former Soviet republics. For example, in Ukraine, there is the biggest Baptist union in Europe, more than 200 churches in Ukraine. So Ukraine is a real Christian country with real freedom of faith and freedom of religion. So there is, but on all occupied territories, so all persecutions against Christians and against churches are on occupied territories. For example, Melitopol. Melitopol is a big city, more than 100,000 population on a sea of Azov. It's a Zaporizhia region. Melitopol. There are a lot of huge churches. I say about 800 members, 1,000 members and more. And all church buildings, just keep in mind, all three church buildings, which all buildings of three biggest churches in Melitopol are taken by rebels and by occupants. All pastors left Melitopol. One of pastors, Dmitro Badiu, was kidnapped for a week and he was imprisoned by Russian army, and then he was released and commanded to leave the city immediately. So we need to speak that Christians, especially if we speak about evangelicals, they are very persecuted on occupied territories. For example, my native church is in Skadovsk. Skadovsk is very small town close to Crimea on a Black Sea bank. I think about half of my native church, they left Skadovsk and the church, more than 100 people from the church, because it is dangerous to stay there, and also for evangelicals is dangerous, especially for church ministers. I mean, pastors or missionaries, they need to leave their churches to keep safe. So that's a huge problem that Christians suffer a lot, especially when we speak about Protestant denominations.
Dis ernstig om te dink hoe dit die kerk en die mense daar affekteer. Skool gaan, jou daaglikse lewe en alles, nie?
Absoluut, maar dit is my so cool dat hy sê hoe vinnig die kerk groei. En dit is my amazing dat die Here selfs iets so slegs soos 'n oorlog kan gebruik om dit is net vir my 'n amper 'n versinne beelding van die woord wat sê I will let everything work together for good for those who love me. So, jy weet dat die kerk groet in spite of van die swaar en die hartseer wat daar aangaan.
Exactly. En luister, een laatste deel met Ruslan op net hierna. Ons gesels met ons journalist vriend in Oekraïne. Sy naam is Ruslan. En ons het vroeger vanoggend dit, ek en Nini bent om gesels oor wat die huidige situasie is in Oekraïne. Hoekom hoor ons so min van dit nou deesdaan in die nuus? Het dinge verbeter, het dit verswak? 10 minute voordat ons die eerste deel van die onderhoud uitgespeel het, toe laat weet hy vir ons, daar is nou net weer bomme wat geval het in die hoofstad van Kiev.
En Kiev was nogals een van die plekke waar het minder was. Ja, waar het bietjie meer veilig was as ander plekke.
Guys, we need help. But what's been the international reaction to what's happening in Ukraine?
First of all, we need to keep in mind that the war in Ukraine is not just another regional conflict. Because a lot of people in the world, they think there are so many regional conflicts. It's so difficult to understand what is happening there. So, okay, they will make a decision and it's like a kind of their own problems. But no, the war in Ukraine is the biggest war in Europe after World War II. And we need to keep it in mind. And the war in Ukraine is very simple. It is very simple to understand what is happening here. Just one country wants to occupy another country, and Russia provides us with only two options: to occupy or to stop exist for Ukraine, to stop existence of Ukraine. So this war is very dangerous and terrible, but at the same time, it is very simple to understand what is happening there. There is no like difficult reasons to understand what is happening there. Everything is simple. One country tries to destroy another country and to take the territory. So it's the first position I want to emphasize. Ukraine does not want to have a war. As you know, in 2014, 8 years ago, our three regions were already occupied. Crimea, Donetsk, and Lugansk. So we already had for last 8 years occupied territories. But in spite of that, we did not try to liberate that territory. So we did not try to do that because in fact, we did not want it. We do not want war. But when Putin decided to go on to keep occupying, we say no. For now, we will fight. And for now, we will liberate all territories and Crimea as well. So we are very grateful and, of course, want to say thank you for international community because we have real good international support, financial and by weapons, especially from Western countries, from United States, from Poland. Poland is a real good Christian country close to Ukrainian border, which did a huge support for Ukraine. But war, unfortunately, is still going on. So we need a lot of weapons and nutrition and ammunition still now to liberate our territories. Our goal is very simple. We just want to live in peace. We just want nobody to take us and disturb us. And it is very simple to stop the war. If Russia and if Putin stop fighting, there will be no war. It's very simple. If Ukraine stop fighting, there will be no Ukraine. So the situation is very, very simple. And I need to emphasize, to underline all the time, everywhere. If Russia stop fighting, there will be no war. If Ukraine stop fighting, there will be no Ukraine. So unfortunately, we have no other option than to fight and to liberate our territories. And so we ask the world just keep us in your prayers. And we ask our churches around the world, just keep us in your prayers, in your hearts. And of course, we need support by weapons and by other kind of resources.
Ruslan, I just want to assure you that we are definitely praying for you. And I'm so glad that we could speak to you because I know that our listeners listening to this interview will also definitely keep you guys in their prayers. I just have one final question for you, because in that same document that Dupi mentioned a bit earlier, there was a whole paragraph on the war crimes that Russia is committing against people of the Ukraine. Why do you think they're getting away with this?
it's a really important question you ask, because during this war we have a lot of typical war crimes when they kill civil people. For example, in Bucha, as you know, in March, Russian troops was very close to Kyiv, just on the border of Kyiv. For example, Bucha is a very close city to Kyiv, was occupied totally. It's a big city, about maybe 20, 30,000 people, they do live here. Bucha is a very beautiful city. Now Bucha is well known for the whole world, because during the occupation of Bucha, hundreds and hundreds of civil people were killed just on the street. My close friend, Vitaly Vinogradov, a board member of our organization, my brother in Christ from the church, he was just killed, was just shot when he was walking outside in a Bucha. He was trying to escape Bucha. He tried to, by walking, to escape Bucha, because it was almost impossible to drive. All bridges were closed, all roads were closed, and he was trying to walk out of Bucha to Kyiv, because Kyiv still was not occupied. Kyiv was fighting. But when he was walking, he was just killed, and his body was lying on the street for a month. Only on April 1st, when Bucha was liberated, his body was found and buried. So, and you ask why they are doing that in Russian occupants. Nobody can explain that. It's like a total evil. So sometimes I want to say that it is not just about Ukraine and Russia. It is just about good and evil. It's just about black and white. So all the time I try to emphasize that this war is very simple. They come to our land just to take our land, and if they cannot do that, they will try to kill people. So there is no another explanation. Why do you kill civil people? Why do you rape civil women? Why do you kill children? What is the reason? There is no war reason. There is no army reason for that. Just to pressure, just to make panic for civil population, just to organize terroristic acts. To spread the fear. I think the main goal is to spread the fear among Ukrainian population. But Ukrainians till now are very brave. Of course, tens and tens of civil people are killed. When I'm talking about this, even now it is difficult even for me to believe that it's our reality in the 21st century, in the center of Europe, that all of that is happening on our land. But now, I think from in April, by God's mercy and by heroic fighting of Ukrainian army, Kyiv was liberated, Bucha and Irpin. In September, Kharkiv region was liberated. Now Kherson is liberated just a few days ago. So after 8 months of war, Ukrainian army, with a huge price, liberate our territories. And a lot of people cannot believe in that. They say Russia is the second army in the world. Yes, it is. But now, because of huge passion of Ukrainian people, because of huge bravery of the Ukrainian army, because of God's mercy, because of international support, we begin to liberate our territories. Because we do not want to have the war, we want to keep our people in safety, and we just want to save our kids, our women, our population. So our goals are very simple. We want to live, we want to liberate our territories, and we ask the world to pray for us and to help us.
Ruslan, thank you so much for your time. I know we had to schedule this interview around, the energy that's available and the power that's available and internet connectivity and all of that. So we really appreciate you taking time to just give us some more insight. We are praying for you guys. We are hoping that this thing comes to an end really quickly. And thank you for taking time to chat to us today.
Thank you very much for this invitation, and thank you for Christians, for brothers and sisters in your country, in South Africa. And even I think one sentence in Afrikaans, ikkesli ferio. Can you understand me? Ikkesli ferio. In the early 90s, a lot of missionaries from South Africa about 92, 93, 94, were coming to Ukraine. So about 25 years ago, a lot of Ukrainian churches, they had strong connection with missionaries from your country. So we're very grateful and we love you guys. And thank you for your prayers and for this time in your radio station to talk about Ukraine.
Dit is een van die goed wat ek regtig nie geweet het nie en is interessant van die Suid-Afrikaanse Christene wat oorgegaan het en gaan help het
in die kerk.
Ja, en dit is ook een van die redes hoekom ek en Doopie besluit het om hierdie onderhoud uit te speel, dat ons as Christene is een liggaam en ons moet nie vergeet dat daar mense aan die ander kant van die water is, in ander plekke van die wêreld wat dit nie so maklik het soos ons, om te aanbid soos wat hulle wil, wil nie, en dit is ons verantwoordelikheid om vir daai mense te bid. So, wanneer jy vanavond of morgend op jou knie gaan onthou, bid vir die mense in Oekraïne, wat het baie swaar het op hierdie stadium.
Dis so ver van verby af, en soos wat hy sê, as hulle, as Rusland ophou beklei, dan is daar vrede. As Oekraïne ophou beklei,
verloor hulle land.
So, kom ons dink aan hulle, en kom ons hou hulle in ons gebede, so verse wat ons kan.
Kuier maandag tot vrijdag saam Doopie en Nina, 3 tot 6, net hier op die Groot Trek, op Groot FM 90.5.